वर्स नंबर 37, वृष्णि नाम वासुदेवोऽस्मि, पांडवानां धनंजयः, मुनीनामप्यहं व्यासः, कवीनामुशना कविः। सो वृष्णि नाम वासुदेव अस्मि। सो वृष्णि, वृष्णि वाज अ क्लैन, वृष्णि द यादवास वर इज द फैमिली वेयर कृष्णा वाज बॉर्न, द लॉर्ड कृष्णा, एंड हिज फादर वाज नेम वाज वसुदेव। सो वसुदेव सन इज कॉल्ड वासुदेव, दैट्स हाउ संस्कृत गोज। सो वन ऑफ कृष्णाज नेम वाज वासुदेव बिकॉज ही वाज द सन ऑफ वसुदेव। So it says among the Vrishni clan, because among the Yadavas there was a king called Vrishni and his family was called the Vrishni clan. And so he was in that family. Just as, Ram was in the solar dynasty. Ram was born in the solar dynasty, Raghuvansh. You know, that was the name of Ram's family. So we know the solar dynasty. We know Raghuvansh. Why? Because Ramchandraji was born. The Lord Ram was born. Like, for example, Buddha, you know, Buddha was born, you know, we know his father's name, his mother's name, his family. Christ, you know, Mary, you know, otherwise who would know Mary? But because she was the mother of Christ and she was born, he was born in Bethlehem. So Bethlehem has become famous and people go there and for pilgrimage. Why? Because the Lord was born there. Like Buddha, where he realized the truth, people still go and worship. So the Vrishni family is named and has become famous because Lord Krishna was born. And the idea being that in this example, he'll say, oh, he's praising himself that I am the best among the Vrishni family, but he was, you know, it was the Lord himself. Also, why he's saying I am the Krishna, I am Vasudev, because you have to see that the Lord that is unmanifest, that is all pervading, manifested on the earth in the form of Krishna or in the form of Ram, or in the form of Jesus, or in the form of Buddha. So all these avatars or these manifestations of the Lord is the formful representation of the formless. You cannot see the formless, but when you think of Krishna playing the flute, or Ram carrying the bow and arrow, or when you think of Jesus on the cross, then that unmanifest becomes manifest. So the idea being that among the unmanifest reality, if you want to see, Krishna says, you can see in me. I am the manifestation of that reality. Actually, talking about Krishna, it's a little off the topic, but, you know, people always wonder why he used to steal butter. I thought I'll just address that story. It's a very interesting story. And people always wonder, isn't stealing bad, especially children, you know? He used to steal butter. Why did he? You know, the story is that he used to get, the whole village, they were milk producers. And they had lots of hundreds of cows, like the big dairies we have. And everybody had lots of cows and they used to produce a lot of milk. And they used to make butter and they used to sell it. And Krishna used to take a band of young boys and they would sneak into somebody's house when the people were out working. And they would make up. And the lady of the house used to put the butter on top in the high pot, very high up on a rope. And they would make like a pyramid, a few boys climb on top of the other, and then Krishna would be on top. He would break the pot and steal the butter and distribute it among all the friends. So they say, why did he do that? If he was the Lord, isn't that something wrong? So I thought I'll spend a couple of minutes talking about it, because there are a lot of reasons, a lot of theories about it. The first thing is that when the gopis used to be making butter, when they used to be churning the butter, they used to be thinking about Krishna. They wanted Krishna to come to their house because they loved him so much. He was so lovable. They said that when he came, everybody, because it was the Lord himself. So he was so sweet. He was so beautiful. Even his mischievous, even his, you know, there is a song, you know, his laughing is sweet and his, you know, even his mischief was sweet. Even his jokes were sweet. Even when he used to play. So they had tremendous, and they didn't know why they loved this person. Later on, of course, they realized that this is the Lord of the creation, who is the Lord of the whole universe, has appeared in our midst. And so when they were churning the butter, they were always thinking about him. And that was their way, that when they were churning the butter, when they were feeding the cows, when they were washing the cows, when they were cleaning the house, even when they were hanging the butter up there, they were thinking about the Lord. And even though they used to pretend to be angry and go yell at his mother, but in their heart, everybody wanted that the Lord should come to my house. And they used to purposely put it higher and higher to make it more. Even in India, they still have on Janamashtami, on the day we celebrate Krishna's incarnation, we have these ropes where they put the butter very high. And not only they put butter, they put lots of money in it nowadays. And then there are these young men who come and they make pyramids one on top of the other. And sometimes it's 200, 300 feet high. And they have several layers of men on top of each other. And then they get the butter and they get the money. So the idea was that Krishna says, you were thinking about me when you made the butter. You were thinking about me when you put the butter up. So you obviously... So it used to make them happy. So that is one explanation. The second explanation is that if I own a car, right, and I have given you the car temporarily to drive, I am still the owner, I am the registered owner, my name is on the pink slip, and I have an extra key, and say you went away on vacation and the car is lying, you know, is doing nothing. So I just go, I take my key, and I drive the car. I am the owner of the car. I have temporarily let you borrow it. And since you are not using it, I drive it. Is that called stealing? No. It's my car. I drove it. And then when you come back, I give it back to you. So he being the Lord of the universe, everything belongs to him. Whatever I have, my body, my clothes, my money, my butter, everything belongs to the Lord of the universe. And he has given it to us to use. This whole earth is his creation, and we have been created and put on this. So the idea being that this sense of ownership, that it is mine, it is my house, it is my money, it is my car, it is my children. You know, we get so attached. Oh, my child, you know, if he goes away, you know, people become heartbroken, and some people even move, you know, to, I know one family who actually bought an apartment next to where the daughter is in college. You know, how miserable for that, because she was trying to get away. And even now the parents. So we get so attached. So the idea is that everything belongs to the Lord, including the children. And I have been given them to take care of. I am a caretaker. And I take care of these children. I take care of my house. I take care of my car. I take care of my wealth. But everything belongs to him. And I am just a tenant. So with that idea, then if the Lord is the owner of everything, and if he came and took the butter, that's not stealing, because it already belongs to him. I get a false sense of ownership. And that's why they say that Swami Chinmayananda used to say, what you get is his gift to you. What you do with what you have is your gift to him. So whatever has been given, use it in his service. So with that attitude, when he's taking the butter, then there is no stealing, because it was his anyway in the first place. And the third one, which is the more symbolic meaning of why, what is the symbolism of butter? Because butter is called as karma phala, means the fruit of action. And the fruit of action always comes after the action, right? Like say I put a seed in the ground, a mango seed. Now when will that mango seed, the fruit come? After 10 years. So the fruit of the mango seed came after 10 years. But I put my hand in the fire, the fruit will come instantly, right? I don't have to wait 10 years. I put my hand, instantly it will burn. So some fruit results come right away. Some results come after 5 years, 10 years. Like, you know, like in stocks, I invested my money. After 10 years, it may grow or it may go down. So the fruit comes after the action. So similarly, the butter is the fruit of action. Like the ladies, you know, they took the milk and they were churning the milk, and then they separate the butter from the, you know, from that charge, from that liquid, and then they hang it up and remove the water. And so that whole process takes days. So the several days. So the butter is the karma phala. Now what happens is that the action we can do, but the result of action has to be dedicated to the Lord. And that's the whole essence of the Karma Yoga. The third chapter of the Bhagavad Gita talks about that. Sarva karman parityaja mam ekam sharanam vraja. All your actions, he says, dedicate to me. So the what happens is that when you dedicate the fruit of the action to the Lord, then you don't develop ego. Then you don't develop the sense of doership or that I did it and it is me. And then you don't get pride, you know, I have done such a wonderful job. You know, nobody else could have done it. I am the only one who did it. And so that subtle pride comes. It could be even something small, like I made a beautiful dish, you know, and then I get a little pride, a little ego, you know, that somebody says, you are the best cook in Bakersfield. You know, and then you get a little pride, or, you know, your house is the best kept, or, you know, or whatever, you know, whatever the example. So the idea being that when the fruit of action comes, you dedicate it to the Lord. You say, Lord, I did my best. And if it succeeded, the success is yours. And so dedicate the fruit of action to the Lord. Do not possess the fruit. In the 12th chapter, he says, Shreyo hi jnanam abhyasat, jnanat dhyanam vishishyate, dhyanat karma phala tyaga, tyagat shantir anantayam. So he says, jnanam abhyasat, through just mechanically doing a thing, is good, but when you do something with knowledge, that is even better. So mechanically doing the rituals and, you know, going to the church or the temple is good, but then when you go with the knowledge that why am I going to church, who is this Lord I am worshipping, then that is better. Then better than jnana is dhyana, is meditation. You sit and contemplate and then you sit and, you know, make that knowledge your own, that is better. But he says better than meditation is even karma phala tyaga, give up the fruit of actions. So all activities that I am doing, dedicate them to the Lord, and the result of the activities belongs to the Lord. It doesn't belong to me. So when Krishna is taking the butter, he is symbolizing that dedicate all the fruit of all the actions, the results of all the actions to me. So that is symbolic. The idea being that anything that I am doing, Lord, it is because of your grace. So that is the essence of that.
That village has to supply all the milk that they have and the butter to the king.
You know, in the beginning, maybe they didn't, but as they slowly, they did eventually realize that he is the Lord, because they used to, you know, want to meet him. And especially when he did that Ras Leela, when he was a young boy, it is said he was about 11 years and some 52 days old. He actually played what's the gopis, the women of the village used to love him so much, but they didn't know why they loved him. And then there is an episode called the Ras Leela where he used to love to play the flute. He used to love to, and when he used to go with his cows, he always had his flute with him. And so on that one particular full moon night, he actually played the Ras Leela where he went outside the village and started playing his flute. And it was so melodious. Flute was so hypnotic, it was like a divine sound, that all the gopis, the women of the village, they all left their homes, they woke up from their sleep and they ran and they danced around him. So he was playing the flute and they were dancing around it. So it says the gopis were all divine beings who had come from heaven just for the purpose of being with the Lord. They said, when the Lord appears, we want to be with you. And so that particular night was the culmination of their bhakti, of their devotion to the Lord. Because that night, it says that the music was so nice and the full moon was playing and they were all dancing and they didn't know. They all left their homes. In fact, some of them were doing work. Some of them were, you know, fixing their home or cooking. And they left everything and they ran because that sound. And they said, oh my God, it's our Lord calling us. And that is symbolized. That's why in Navratri, here in the nine nights, when people do the Garba, it symbolizes the Lord playing. And it is said even the gods from heaven appeared and they were watching this Ras happening. And they were watching and they were showering flowers because this divine music was like a once in a lifetime. So that's probably when they realized that this was the Lord whom we had come to see. Yeah, so I think it was probably a gradual process, but the culminate, and it is said after that he never played the flute again. He left and he went to Mathura because there he had to do other things, and he left the village, and of course the village people were sad, and he never played the flute again. He gave it up. This is it. After that, if he touched the flute, it reminded him of the love of the gopis, and he, in his heart, he couldn't bring himself to play the flute anymore.
But Gopika's part, like from last life of Rama, right? They pray Rama to be with him.
Yeah, his life is fun. It's so much to read. Ram was an ideal person. Ram's life is how an ideal person should be. Krishna's life is very interesting. He's very mischievous and he's does things that you can't explain and you can't understand, but there is a great symbolism. And one thing about Krishna's life was he had so many tragedies in his life, but they always show him as very cheerful. You know, when he was born, he was separated from his parents, and then he had to stay with foster parents, and then he had to leave his family and go to Mathura, and all kind of problems happened, but he's a symbol of cheerfulness, makes everybody happy, whoever he is with. No matter how many tragedies come to him, always laughing. Yes, it's so beautiful. This is the stories of Krishna are so nice. In fact, that whole family died. The Yadu family, they all started fighting with each other. And actually, they died when he was still alive. His whole family was destroyed. So, Pandavanam Dhananjaya. And among the Pandavas, I am Arjuna. They say, why, you know, Krishna is praising first himself and then praising the student. Swamiji says, well, it's a good thing. You know, like when a student is there, you say, oh, that's a very good question, or, you know, that's a very good comment, or when a student studies very well, you praise him. But in the fact is that among the five brothers, there were Pandavas, were five brothers, Arjuna was the best warrior. Even though Yudhishthira, the oldest, was the most noble and the most, you know, the best person as a person, but Arjuna was the best warrior, and it was because of him that the Pandavas won the war. And also Arjuna was Krishna's friend, and that's why Krishna actually, he went and asked Krishna that I want you to be on my side. Actually, the story is that when Krishna had an army and he had a kingdom, Krishna was a king, and so Arjuna went, and Duryodhana, who was the Kaurava, who was the evil king, and they both went to meet Krishna. And so they both said, Krishna, we want you on our side. And he said, Arjuna said, I want you on my side. So Krishna said, look, you can either have my entire army, my whole army of thousands of soldiers, very well trained, or you can have me alone. But I'm not going to fight. I'm not going to pick up a weapon. Krishna doesn't pick up a weapon in the whole, he doesn't fight in the whole Mahabharata war. So do you want my whole army to fight on your side, or do you want me without any arms? I won't fight. So the evil brother king said, I want the army. If you are not going to fight, what am I going to do with you? You can go. And Arjuna says, that's good. I wanted you anyway. I want you on my side. I don't care about the army, because when the Lord is on my side, then I don't need anybody else. And so that is the story. So Arjuna said, I'm happy. Just you be my charioteer. You drive my car. And he actually was, Krishna was his chauffeur. He drove his car for his chariot for all the 18 days of battle. So the idea being that if the Lord is your charioteer, you surrender your life to the Lord. You say, Lord, you are my charioteer. You are the driver of my life. You take me wherever you want. I'm not going to tell you, take me here, take me there. I'm not going to give any instructions. But I'm happy to go where you take me. Then the Lord, when he becomes your sarthi, then victory is guaranteed, then your life will be perfect. And that's what they say, surrender to the Lord. What we try to do, that we try to use our intellect too much. You know, like when we sit for meditation, intellectually I must get that truth. And the intellect is good to a certain extent, but the intellect has to be accompanied with the mind. The mind and the intellect together have to work. The intellect for knowledge, and the mind for love, for devotion. And a lot of us in this modern age lack this. We say that we don't need it. That is for the illiterate people in the village, you know, who can't read the Bhagavad Gita. They can sit and pray. You know, I don't need to, because I am an intellectual. And that is a big problem. And I myself find the same thing, that the intellect can become an obstacle in your spiritual progress. When the intellect is combined with love, that's why they say that the spiritual journey is like a bird with two wings. The bird only has one wing flapping, it's going to go round and round. It's not going to be able to travel. But when the bird has two wings, then she can fly beautifully in space. So love and knowledge, bhakti and gyan, those are the two wings. And on a spiritual journey, you have to have knowledge and you have to have love. Some people say, I don't need knowledge, you know, I'm a bhakta, I'll just sit and pray. That is good if you can dedicate your life to him. But when you add the knowledge with it, then the spiritual journey is better. So that's why they say that I am the Arjuna who had love for the Lord, at the same time who went to him asking for right knowledge. He not only loved him as a friend, he loved Krishna, but then he said, you teach me the Bhagavad Gita, and the entire 18 chapters of the Bhagavad Gita are Krishna's teachings to Arjuna. So that's why he says, among the Pandavas, I am Arjuna. Dhananjaya, I am, that was one of Arjuna's name. Muni naam api aham vyasaha. And among the munis, the word muni comes from mananashilavan. Mananashilavan means it is contemplative. So among the contemplative sages, I am Vyasa. Now Vyasa, contemplative means one who has contemplated, one who has thought about the truth and then has realized the truth is called Muni. And why does he pick Vyasa? Because Vyasa was an amazing figure. He was a giant in among Hindu literature. There has been no greater figure than Vyasa, because when Vyasa appeared on the scene, we had the Vedas, you know, but they were like scattered, you know, the knowledge was scattered. There were some rituals and there were some Upanishads and there was some, all these, you know, worship of nature, you know, all these things. And we had so much literature, it was scattered all over the place. And then people used to try and memorize it. So the teacher would tell the student and the student would memorize and then he would pass it on to his student. And so it was passed on from teacher to student, what they call is Guru Shishya Parampara. And that is good when people have a lot of time. But when Vyasa appeared, the society was changing. People are like, nowadays, if you tell somebody to memorize, you know, even one chapter of the Bhagavad Gita is too hard, or even one shlokas, we don't have time. And they say you should try and memorize, because when you memorize these verses of the Bhagavad Gita with the meaning, you can even pick selected verses that you like and you enjoy. Because when you memorize them with the meaning, then the chanting and the process of memorization makes a firm groove in your mind where it becomes pakka, the knowledge becomes strong. So that was happening at Vyasa's time, that people didn't have time to memorize. So that's why he sat down and actually organized them into four Vedas, Rig, Sam, Yajur and Atharva Ved. And not only that, but he made them into sections, the Brahmanas, and you know, so the sections, the one which are, you know, just the rituals, and then the one which were in the Aranyakas, which were in praise of nature. And then the third was the Upanishads, which are the knowledge. So the Upanishads are the knowledge. That's why we have a lot of Upanishads in the office. We have Kathopanishad and Mundak Upanishad and all of these. So the Upanishads are the knowledge portion. So the Vedas, he actually divided, okay, these are the rituals, these verses. And then these verses are in praise of nature. And then these verses are for study. So the person could pick, you know, somebody who wants to do more rituals can, you know, memorize those verses. Somebody wants knowledge, he can go to a teacher and study the Upanishads. So he organized them, wrote them down so people could, then it could be, it was not lost. He kind of preserved the knowledge. Otherwise, just by memorization, if it's not written down, the knowledge gets lost. Then he also wrote the Puranas, because the Upanishads again were very hard for an average person to understand. Because it's too complex. Oh, you know, I am that Brahman and how can I know him? Very complicated. So he wrote the same stories through the Puranas, through the Bhagavat and through all these stories, Shiv Puran and all these, Devi Puran and all. So through stories, he gave us the truth. Then he wrote the Mahabharata, which is 100,000 verses. Which were composed by him. The whole story of the Mahabharata in which the Bhagavad Gita appears was told by him in verse. Of course, the story had happened, but he then like became a historian. He gave us that story in verse and it was written down again by Ganeshji. There's another story with that, where he wrote it down. So he gave us that. Then he gave us the Brahma Sutras. The Brahma Sutras are very interesting. Actually, they are again considered PhD texts. Sutra means one line. And in these Brahma Sutras, they have given the highest knowledge, but just in very, very few words. And to study that, you not only have had to study the Upanishads and have a firm background in Sanskrit and all, but then you have to go to a very illustrious teacher. The Brahma Sutras cannot be studied by an individual. So that's why they say that after you have studied everything, then you study the Brahma Sutras last. So he is the one who gave us these one-line, you know, statements, which then can be studied. So the idea being that Vyasa's contribution to our literature was so immense, that's why he says, among all the contemplative sages, I am Vyasa, and Kavi Naam Ushana Kavihi. So among the kavis in the modern Hindi and most of the Indian languages means poet. But the correct meaning of kavi is seer, S-E-E-R, seer. Seer means one who can see. See does not mean visibly see, like Swamiji even said this week, that when somebody says, I went here, you say, oh, I see. And then I did this, I see. No, you are not seeing him do it. You know, he did it a week ago. But when you say, I see, means I understand. So seers or kavis are those who have seen the truth, who have understood the truth, who have applied it and brought it into their life. So seer means a contemplative person who has understood and experienced the truth and has seen it. So again, when you say seen God, it does not mean seen him physically, but see him as my true essence. And see means as like Shankaracharya in one place, he composes a shloka called Hastamalaka Stotram. One of his students was Hastamalaka. And why did he give him the name? Because he said, just as if I have a fruit in my hand, how clear it is, right? Amalaka is a fruit. Hasta means hand. So if I have a fruit in my hand, I can see it. Nobody needs to tell me that there is a fruit in your hand. So for that student, the truth was that clear to him. That's why he named him Hastamalaka. He says, for him, the truth is as clear as a fruit in the palm of his hand. That accomplished student he was. So that's why he called him Hastamalaka. So the idea being a seer is one who has seen the truth very clearly. Like Ramakrishna Paramhans, he could see the Mother Goddess every day. He used to talk to her, which people around could not. And they used to think he's a madman because he's talking to, you know, somebody in his room. And we don't know whom he's talking to, but he used to be talking to the Mother Goddess. So he says, among the seers, I am Ushana Kavi. Now, if you search in the literature, there is not much reference to who was this Ushana Kavi. But some of the authorities feel, and if you actually Google also, it is said Ushana Kavi was Shukracharya. Shukracharya was a great, very great scholar who had a lot of knowledge. And he was so brilliant that actually the demons invited him to be their teacher. He actually was instructing the demons, you know, because just as the good people had an instructor, so the demon said, we need an instructor. And so they invited him. But he was a great, great author and a great writer and a great thinker and had a great knowledge. So people think that he was the one that is, because in the Rig Veda, they refer to Shukracharya as a kavi. So he was anyway, whatever you can say, that one of the great thinkers of that time. So Krishna says, among all the great thinkers, I am Ushana Kavi. So the idea being that whatever is the best, whatever is the essence, I am. Om Sarve Bhavantu Sukhinaha, Sarve Santu Niramayaha, Sarve Bhadrani Pasyantu, Ma Kashchit Dukha Bhag Bhavet. Om Shanti Shanti Shantihi, Harihi Om Shri Gurubhyo Namaha. Hari Om.